All right, the House Ways and Means Committee is going to come to order. It's February 3rd, 2006, and President Representative Seaton and myself. And today, we're going to take up three things: House Bill 63, House Bill 223, and we're going to hear a preliminary report from the Alaska Retirement Management Board. And the presenter on that report is going to be Larry Simmons, who is the board member of the Alaska Retirement Management Board that was set up under Senate Bill 141, and he's also the finance officer for the city of Kenai. And I've asked him to be joined by Gary Bader, who's with the Department of Revenue, and a long time, where we were also joined by Representative Samuels and Representative Grunberg. Representative Seaton has a finance subcommittee meeting. He's going to be excused for this portion of the meeting. But let me ask first if there's any public testimony on House Bill 63, which is an oil severance tax bill. Is there anyone online who wanted to testify to that? Representative Wilson's joined us. There's no one online on House Bill 63. Okay, I'm going to close public participation on House Bill 63. We'll take action on that at the end of the meeting, Mr. Representative Grunberg. And is there anyone to testify on House Bill 223? Is there anyone online to testify on House Bill 223? Seeing no one online, we'll take that up at the end of the meeting after Mr. Simmons' testimony, and we'll close public participation on House Bill 223. And right at this point, I'd like to introduce Mr. Simmons. Mr. Simmons, if you could identify who you are for the record and here's your testimony. I know that you had testified earlier last year when the Ways and Means Committee had gone to the city of Kenai for its public hearings on the unfunded liability in the PERS and TERS system. And at that point, we were anticipating this report. This is not the report, which is due out in March from the Armed Board, but we appreciate this information that you provided to the committee. So if you want to go ahead and provide your testimony, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Larry Simmons. I'm the finance director for the city of Kenai, but I'm here as representative of the Alaska Retirement Management Board. Senate Bill 141 requested a report to the legislature, and it was due within 120 days of the enactment or establishment of our board. We have submitted that report to you, and the report had five requirements, and those five requirements are listed on page one of the report, and I will just go through those five requirements individually. The first one is the board's preliminary assessment of the financial health of all public employee retirement plans and teacher retirement plans. Now, this report is preliminary from the standpoint that we do not have current actuarial information. We have June 30, 2004 as the latest actuarial information, and that report does not contain the impact of the new DC plan established by Senate Bill 141. But that report, which I believe the legislature has received, that report shows that the PERS and TERS systems are $5.7 billion underfunded, that PERS is 70% funded, TERS is 63% funded, and that the employer rates needed to fund those systems over the next 25 years is 28% for PERS and 42% for TERS. However, the board, the ARM board, recently set the rates at 21.77% for PERS and 26% for TERS. I think one significant point from that actuarial evaluation is that the unfunded liability has grown from 2003. And although we do not have the 2005 actuarial information, it's our expectation that very likely the liability will grow again because we have not had investment earnings on $5.7 billion and the employers have not paid the full actuarially required rates. So the second requirement is to report on the actuarial services purchased by the board. The board approved hiring Buck Consultants as the new actuary. The plan is that Buck will replicate Mercer's 2004 results so that they know they've got all of the information. And then they will prepare the 2005 valuation. That valuation is to be delivered to the board at our March meeting. The next requirement of Senate Bill 141 is to make recommendations for additional legislative or administrative policy to improve the financial health of the retirement plans. The very first one is no enhancements to benefits for at least 1 year. And that's because we don't really have the ability to determine actuarially the impact of new benefits. The next item is to index the health deductible in the new DC plan to CPI. Otherwise, you could have a situation like we do now in our current tiers where a $100 deductible is a $100 deductible forever. But if those deductibles were indexed to CPI, then you could have the benefit that was intended might not be stuck to the dollar value. The next item is short and long-term recommendations for addressing the unfunded liability of the retirement plans. What I'd like to do is go to another paragraph here and just read it to you. It is clear that the underfunding problems of the retirement systems did not occur overnight, and it's also clear that there are no easy solutions to the underfunding problem. The solution will not be painless because it will require the commitment of scarce resources that have competing demands. However, ignoring this problem will result in deferring the problem to future generations when solutions involving resource allocation may prove more painful than they are today. Alaska's defined benefit plans have a pension component that is set in statute with constitutional guarantees. Consequently, there is no immediate opportunity available to the board to change the pension liability. The health component of the defined benefit plans provides some opportunity for addressing the shortfall to the extent that cost to provide that benefit can be managed. And so now with that preface, I'll go back to short and long-term recommendations. The first short-term recommendation is to create a new health plan for the new hires under the new DC plan.
Thank you, Mr. Simmons.
I'm not quite finished, sir.
Go ahead.
We need to create a health plan that's sustainable and ultimately affordable. The second item is to infer preferred provider programs where possible. I know that we are already working on that. The next is to continue to promote the use of generic drugs. We're already working on that and saving substantial amounts of money. Another is to continue to implement cost containment measures and the periodic review of eligibility of retiree dependents. This has been done, and by the way, apparently it's projected to save $16 million a year. On to the long-term recommendations, which in the report are on page 7. Consider extending the payoff period of the liabilities. In other words, extending it like a mortgage. You would pay more ultimately, but maybe the annual cost would be less. To request the state to make contributions to the systems. Since the state is expected to have a large budget surplus this year, we recommend the legislature make contributions to the systems in order to increase the funding status and reduce the burden on employers in the future. Again, it's similar to paying down a mortgage. If you pay it down quickly in front, it will save you a lot of money in the long term. Adopt a funding strategy that will set a limit on the rate of employer contributions. This strategy would essentially be a combination of the first two strategies. We recommend full funding. We don't recommend anything less than full funding. Again, it's like a mortgage. If you pay extra principal payments over time, you'll pay less money. The board will submit additional data regarding funding status and recommendations upon receipt of the actuarial assessments expected to be delivered by Buck Consultants during and after March 2006. So the board will deliver these new actuarial reports after we have reviewed them at our March meeting. and I believe that's March 23rd. We also make a comment on pension obligation bonds. We received a presentation, a fairly extensive presentation, and at this time, we will just say that we plan to continue to assess the fiscal, practical, and legal issues surrounding pension obligation bonds. Another of the requirements is recommendations for legislative procedures regarding fiscal notes for new legislation. Fiscal notes are defined in statute, and the board would just say that because actuarial information is normally needed to assess the impact of new bills, and because those actuarial calculations take time, that it's our recommendation that bills affecting the pension system be introduced early. There were other requirements of Senate Bill 141 to establish a DC plan. We have selected the investment options and managers. A list is in the report, and the investment options and managers will be monitored on an ongoing basis by the board, investment staff, and consultants. Senate Bill 141 also set up a health reimbursement arrangement. The part that the board will have in this is setting the interest rate that will be credited to members' accounts, and the rate will likely be related to long-term interest rates. As far as ongoing work, the board has requested information from the actuary that will help us define recommendations for solving the long-term funding problem. And with that concludes my prepared remarks, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, I have a number of questions, but first, does the committee have any questions, Mr. Simmons? Let me ask however, Mr. Bader, did you have any testimony you wanted to give on
no,
this
sir.
At all? You're here for questions.
Yes.
Only. Did the committee have any questions? Representative Wilson.
I had a question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You said that if there was a bill that had something to do with that you wanted early on in the session, how long would it take them to get some kind of a fiscal note? And so when you say early in the session, how much time is needed?
Through the chair, that's a good question, and it probably doesn't have a real good answer because it depends on what's being proposed. If what's being proposed is an extensive overhaul, then I could see an actuary asking for a significant amount of time to do the analysis. If it's just what would happen if we did this, perhaps it could be done shortly. We discussed this at the board, and initially we had dates, numbers of days, like 90 days. Before 90 days into the session, we recommend, but it was in our discussion, it was clear that we couldn't really set that kind of a parameter because we don't really know how long it will take. It'll just depend on the item. But just generally speaking, it's better to get it in early if we want to analyze it actuarially.
Okay. You had testified in your comments that section recommendations for legislative procedures, you largely focused on fiscal notes. And a lot of people around the legislature have a problem with fiscal notes. And, they're too high, you send it back. I don't like this, it's too high because it's my bill, right? So you send it back, get a lower one. But did you say the fiscal notes should be submitted earlier? Was that your testimony?
Well,
was that your testimony? Fiscal notes should be submitted earlier? Something should be submitted early.
Just that the bill should be submitted early so that the analysis can be done and an accurate fiscal note provided.
But you mean any piece of legislation affecting retirement benefits must be submitted early enough to adequately analyze the fiscal impacts?
That's the wishes of the board.
Sure. Okay.
I sense that you find that to be impractical. And
well, I mean, the nature of the beast is,
as we saw last year.
I appreciate
year.
That you aspire for recommendations. So. the other aspect of the preliminary report that you had given to us was on the Office of Administrative Appeals, and you had some comments on there. But I had a couple of questions about that. On your letter to the legislature on page 11, where you discuss the Office of Administrative Appeals, It used to be that there were appeals of somebody had a gripe with the PERS and TERS benefit. They would go to the PERS board and then provide their testimony. The state would provide its argument and testimony, and the board would then shut the door, deliberate, make a decision, and the employee pretty much knew right then what the decision was, and then the board would come out with a written decision later discussing why it made its decision. That was a great system for an employee as opposed to a court, which didn't have to wait for years with huge discovery costs and you know, the agonizingly long wait of whether you won or lost. How is the Office of Administrative Appeals and ARM going to deal with that? How is the process going to change?
My understanding is the ARM board is not a part of that process.
Right. Mr. Bader, do you have any thoughts about that?
That is my understanding as well, that the a person with a grievance first appeals to the administrator of the system. If they do not get satisfaction, it goes to the Office of Administrative Appeals, and that the ARM board is not involved in that process.
All right. Do you know, so far there have been 18 appeals transmitted to the Office of Administrative Hearings by the Division of Retirements, and 15 of which have had or been scheduled for a pre-hearing, one of which has had a hearing and the decision is pending. It's been transmitted by the Office of Administrative Hearings. That seems to me to change the system quite a bit. There's a lot more delay than associated with an employee's decision on their benefits. Correct? I mean, you've got a hearing officer now, you've got a pre-hearing, you've got a whole panoply of sort of procedures that didn't exist before.
It really wouldn't be my domain, but I can speculate that in the past it was also difficult to for an appellant to meet the scheduled timeline of the PERS or TERS board as well. And in this case, it may be possible, I don't know how it's working out, but it may be possible that they could get a more expeditious hearing because the hearing officer might be able to travel to where the appellant resides, or that it might be more efficient. I couldn't say for sure, though.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The other aspect of this report is that if your actuary is not going to provide its information, Buck Consultants is not going to provide its information to the ARM board until March. Is that March? Is it Buck going to present the information at the board's March 23rd meeting? Is that what it is?
That's correct.
So you couldn't? Could you possibly have anything to the legislature before April?
If I may, Mr. Yeah. Chair, we have submitted questions to Buck Consulting. As Mr. Simmons alluded to in our long-term strategies, we have suggested that they look at combinations of extending the amortization period, a cap on rates, and a contribution to the system. And we have given them a number of scenarios, combinations of those three items that we have asked them to respond to. That was just recently transmitted to Buck. In the ideal circumstance, we could know the results before the March meeting. We haven't heard back from them yet. That was submitted within the last week. But we can check with them and see if they have some idea when they might be able to respond to those questions, because they are central questions. What we expect to get in March are valuation reports which tell us the status of the system. We know in very specific ways that we're, you know, severely underfunded, and in terms of the questions we put to them are strategies for getting out of that underfunded circumstance. So we may have something sooner and we can report back to you.
Right. But one of the problems, too, identified in your report at page 7 under long-term recommendations, it says the opinion of the board is that some long-term recommendations should not be offered until all the work of the actuary has been vetted by a second actuary. So what I understand by that is that the ARM board is not going to come up with some or all of its long-term recommendations until Buck provides its information, and then you're going to have to hire another actuary, if you haven't hired them already, to provide a second opinion on Buck, and then you provide the long-term recommendations. So Have you hired your second actuary to review your first actuary?
We are in that process. In fact, on Monday, we will have a committee meeting to go over the proposal. There's only one. And at our February meeting, I would expect that the ARM board would name that second actuary.
So you've only had one firm apply to be the second opinion?
One qualifying proposal.
Huh. Seems to me that's the best proposal to submit because you can sit and second guess.
I don't know if there were other proposals.
There were other submissions, but they failed to meet the minimum qualifications.
I see. Well, does that mean that the there's going to be a part one report and a part two report? The part one report will contain everything except the long-term recommendations until your second actuary provides their analysis?
Mr. Chair, I would speculate that if we get information from Buck from the letter that we've written them that is actionable information for the legislature, that the board would provide that information, notwithstanding that we don't have all the facts. If there are strategies that say this is a course of action that you might take to begin addressing the problem, the problem may be $5.7 billion, it may be some other number. We'll know that other number later, but you can start addressing the problem without a, in my judgment, a definitive number provided by both Buck and or the second actuary. The second actuary's job will be primarily to look at the assumptions that go into the work done by Buck.
The problem is it runs headlong into the one of your other recommendations, and that is to have bills affecting the health of the pension plan submitted as early as possible, because conservative, prudent, or obstreperous legislator, however you want to talk about it, depending on your position, could say, well, we shouldn't take a position or take an action until we've had that second analysis to see whether we're taking the action we're taking as a legislature is correct. So it makes it difficult to meet your objective of acting early, and it makes it difficult for the legislature to say we should act because there's a second opinion that may come out that undercuts what the legislature's considering.
I would respond that unless the legislature would be contemplating paying off the entire indebtedness of the system, that simply knowing the magnitude of the underfunding cries out for the beginning of addressing the problem. You may not know the total magnitude of it, but if you know that that you have a giant problem and you know that you can address the problems confronted by municipalities in terms of contribution rates, that it would be prudent to proceed even in the absence of knowing the total amount of underfunding.
Well, one of the things that is of some concern is that we know right now preliminary estimates are around $6 billion of underfunded liability. And we also know that we're in a surplus situation with cash that we could use to pay the unfunded liability. Yet we haven't heard a strong indication that money should go to the payment of the debt or the underfunded liability as opposed to investment in other kinds of actions. So how do we read that?
Well, our report on page 7, item 2 there says that since the state is expected to have a large budget surplus this year, we recommend the legislature make contributions to the systems in order to increase the funding status and reduce the burden on employers in the future. So that particular item, the board is in favor of making contributions to the system because there's little doubt that that would improve the unfunded status and reduce the rates that employers will have to pay in the future.
But the trick and where the rubber meets the road is on the number. And the just like in tax policy where you have to assign a number on how much tax percentage to charge a resource, you have to assign a number to the payment of an unfunded liability. And the stronger position that ARM takes may translate into a stronger position the administration takes and potentially for a larger amount of money to be funded by the legislature. So is the ARM report going to come out with a specific number on the amount of money to pay into the system to address the unfunded liability?
Well, I can just make this comment as a fiduciary. A fiduciary must act totally on behalf of the beneficiaries. So when I put my hat on, that hat on, then I can just say the larger the number, the better, obviously. And the whole $6 billion, or whatever the number is, would be the best number. But a practical number is obviously going to be lower than that. I'm sure that the board's position is that the larger that number can be, the better it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have the unique position of being both representing a community that has an unfunded liability and to sit on this board as a fiduciary for the state.
Correct.
And I think that you have in your own mind the kinds of mechanisms that you think should be addressed to address the unfunded liability in general, correct?
Generally, I think that, yes, I do have opinions about that. Generally, I think that we should make an ongoing commitment to annually fund an amount of money that will make the rate that employers have to pay a reasonable rate, that will not significantly degrade services that communities are provided and tasked with providing to the public. Exactly what that number is, I'm not sure, but some of the questions that we've asked to the actuary will address that. We've asked them to tell us different contribution rates stretched out over different amortization periods, and what would the annual contribution rate have to be to sustain that rate. So those are the questions that we've proposed to the actuary are getting at the answer to your question.
But also there's a fundamental structure problem in the state. And is the ARM board going to take a position on the need for some sort of recurring source of revenue to address this on a longer sustainable basis?
I can't answer for the ARM board on that, but that would be something for us to consider. Of course, again, our primary responsibility is to get the money into the system. That's why we would not, in my opinion, would not want to limit the tools that are available to municipalities or the state as to where they would get that money, how they would get that money to get it into the system.
I guess what I'm saying is that I think this is an opportunity for the ARM board to address the problem, the structural problem the state of Alaska has. We have no recurring source of revenue that can be sustained on a long-term basis, except for the vagaries of the investment returns and the oil prices.
And I'm hearing what you're saying, and we will certainly have that discussion. I think that we can discuss those types of things. We're a little bit reluctant, I think, to specify a certain source of income, but I think perhaps we could suggest that this is a possibility.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to follow up on what Representative Weirach said, because is there some kind of actuarial number that if we have, if we pay a certain amount, I mean, does it push it over a certain amount? I think that's what I would like to hear. Actuarially, if we paid $2 billion, what would that be the difference of one? I mean, is there an actuarially number where we can see, yes, that's going to make a difference, and so that we have a ballpark idea, because if you just leave it open, we don't know, and we need some actuarial proof of maybe where that magic number is, and I don't even know if there is such a thing.
Thank you, Representative Wilson. We have asked the actuary to tell us the impact of contributions on the consolidated rate, and I think that gets at your question. And we've asked them to provide us that impact in $100 million increments. So for every $100 million, what impact does that have on the consolidated rate? And so you'd be able to measure, exactly like you're saying. Well, if it gets up to $2 billion, if we put in $2 billion today, it would have this impact. If we put in $100 million today, it will have this impact.
Well, I appreciate your position, Mr. Simmons. I know that you're sort of fighting this battle all the time, trying to balance the obligations of your debt with the requirements that run a city and a borough. So I think I appreciate your additional service on this board.
Well, I'm very pleased to be on this board. It's a wonderful opportunity for me personally, and I think that the board will make a difference in the lives of Alaskans and the things that the legislature is doing. And I'd like to thank this committee for all your work on this subject, because it's going to impact the lives of Alaskans, and that's what I think is important to recognize here.
Any further question, Representative Grunberg?
This is a question I haven't heard addressed directly, although it may well have been. It's a legal question. If there's a constitutional right for beneficiaries under the system, you can't diminish their ability to obtain a pension, whatever they're entitled to. Does that not imply also a legal right of the pension to have the contributions it's due from the state and the employers? Don't they owe that money?
Well, I'm eminently qualified to answer legal questions as a CPA, but I believe that the answer to your question is yes. The contributions are legally required, and the armed board sets the rate.
You might examine that, and you might want to put that in one of your future reports. Mr. Bader, you were nodding and smiling. At least you were smiling. Do you want to pitch in on that one, too?
No, I was smiling at the CPA answering the legal question.
My question remains to you. Do you agree with him?
I'm not sure that I do. I think that the state has a requirement to provide the benefit. How it goes about doing that, the plan has an obligation to provide the benefit. How it goes about doing that, I think, this would be, I'm not an attorney either, but I would think that there are several paths that take you to providing that benefit. Clearly the best one would be to be fully funded. But does that mean if you find out tomorrow that you're underfunded, do you have to get right back to fully funded the next day? I'm not sure. I just don't.
That's an interesting question, if I may follow up on that, because the question then arises, when does the duty arise, as well as the method by which the payments must be made? I would like to see something from maybe the board or something on that. I think your point may very well be well taken. I'd like to find out. Well, let me ask you, are you aware of any legal opinions on that subject?
I'm not.
Neither am I, and I'm wondering why we never thought to ask it, or maybe somebody else did. But I'd like to find out if there are any opinions that can be released. And I'm asking both the board and the department, because I think that that's a very central question. Is there a legal obligation? When does it arise? How can it be satisfied? And what is the extent of that obligation? If that could be provided to this committee, and I think probably, and I see the chair of state affairs just walked in, I would ask that it be provided to both committees, this committee and that.
Provided to the legislature, I would hope.
Thank you. Thank you both.
And then finally, I know that earlier when Mr. Bader testified, you may have heard it or not, that the three primary recommendations he anticipated were considering extending the payoff period on the debt, adopting a limitation on employer contribution, and requesting contributions to address the liabilities. The payoff period and the employer contributions may be able to be dealt with administratively. It's the payoff issue, and I can't emphasize this enough. The legislature and administration will probably put great weight on what ARM recommends, and so we look to you for the appropriate number.
Thank you.
We can play around and answer that number, but we will invest a great amount of stock in your recommendation, I think. I mean, just speaking for myself.
Well, thank you for that. I appreciate that, and we will work on that question.
Okay. Are there further questions of these two gentlemen? Again, we do appreciate your service, and you have good staff, and Mr. Bader helping you. All right. We'll have that report in March, about March 23rd, as I understood, and we plan to have Ms. Schubert here to present that, and Mr. Simmons, you're welcome to join her here, and Mr. Bader, I hope you can come back for that presentation to the board. At this point, I'd like to ask if there's a committee action on House Bill 663. Oil Severance Tax, Representative Grunberg.
I move the bill be passed out with individual recommendations.
I'll object.
Okay, there's been a motion to move House Bill 63 with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note, Representative Grunberg.
Yes.
Did you want to speak to your objection, Representative Simmons?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. First, I'd like to thank Representative Guerra, and I know his staff, Emily, and Deborah Volk, and all the rest of them that put a lot of work into it. And I very much believe that the subject of oil taxes needs to be discussed in the legislature. And quite frankly, I hope that I am in the minority on this vote, to be perfectly honest. The only reason that I object is this particular piece of legislation. The subject material, I think, is fine, and some of the mechanisms may be fine. But I'm uncomfortable with not having the world-class analysis on what we're looking at. I mean, and you can argue whether you agree with Dr. Van Meer's analysis or the people that Legislative Budget and Audit has hired to look at this, because it is 85% of our revenue is at stake here. You need to know what the competition around the world is doing in there. And I know that Representative Guerra, I know that you tried to get as much as you could. It's not enough for me to start making the analysis. I also realize there's three more committees of referral, one of which I'm the co-chairman of. So I hope the bill moves forward, but I wanted to have my objections on the record on what exactly, how much money we're talking about here, and how important both the oil and the gas are to the future of this state. And with that, I will maintain my objection to moving this particular piece forward.
May I respond?
Yeah, Representative Grunberg.
Thank you. I very much appreciate the co-chair of resources comments, and certainly there's a ways to go. But the journey begins in a single step. And if you never take the first step, you'll never get anywhere.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am thinking about this with a lot of trepidation. I realize, too, how significant these incomes are to the state of Alaska. And it's scary for me to think, what happens? What are the ramifications? So there's a lot to think about, and I don't think I have enough information either to do anything. But I do have confidence in my colleagues as it moves along that they can work on this more, maybe draw out some more things or figure some things out. But it's very discerning to me, so I'm nervous about this. Thank you.
Further testimony, Representative
Seaton. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I'm in the same position. I don't think that we've got enough analysis right now to say that this is exactly the right solution. My reasoning is that this is going to go to resources where the expertise has been generated, and so the exact analysis of where the right place is, but I think that my vote to move this on is saying is that we know something is wrong with the tax structure, that we need to change it, and I'm willing to let the other committees work on the exact amount, and I think we'll be seeing some other bills as well dealing with the same thing, and so hopefully they can be coordinated. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, there's a motion to move the bill with the individual recommendations and attached fiscal note and objection. Secretary call the roll.
Representative Roper, absent. Representative Samuels?
No.
Representative Seaton?
Yes.
Representative Wilson?
Yes.
Representative Grunberg?
Yes.
Representative Moses, not present. Chair Wyrock?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, four yay, one nay,
Okay, bill moves from committee with an individual recommendation attached to fiscal note. We have now House Bill 223 for the committee. Is there a motion on the bill?
Yes, there is.
Representative Gruenberg, your motion.
I move the bill with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
I'll object for discussion.
Thank you, Representative Samuels.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. And once again, I'd like to thank Representative Croft, who I've had at length discussions over this, over coffee, over meals, occasional beer or two. Representative Crawford, I've had less discussions with you, but this has been discussed quite a bit, and with the forethought of my thoughts of my brain here for the better part of a year now. I believe in the legislative process a lot. The Founding Fathers set up this process so that despite all the rhetoric on both sides of the aisle, nothing ever really swings too far one way or another because it is so hard to get something through the process. And that is the kind of the reality of the way that the democracy is set up right now. The initiative process, I think, circumvents that. And I understand wholeheartedly the frustration. I have voted for initiatives. I wish I could have voted 10 times for some initiatives. But when you get something on a ballot, a lot of times, whether it be oil taxes or wolves or pick your subject, the problem is whoever comes up with the best bumper sticker or the most money, and in this case it might be the more money against this initiative, or it might be on an occasional issue, that sometimes you don't have the debate. The legislative process, as frustrating as it is for all of us, the legislative process brings forward all of the experts, all of the testimony, all of the political maneuverings that make it so difficult to get some through, also brings all points of view to the table. And one of the biggest problems I've got, which while I'm going to remove my objection in just a second, is I'd like to thank, actually, last year Michael Hurley, and this year I believe Jack Griffin testified from ConocoPhillips on why, on an economic basis, why they didn't like this. Now, I could guess what the ExxonMobil Corporation and BP think about it. I can guess. I could probably get up there and give their spiel for them. But they chose not even to enter into the debate on the question. So if the legislative process is going to move forward, and the main victims, if you will, of this tax are not even willing to sit up here and tell us what they think, when we all pretty much know, but they're not willing to articulate why the economics of this reserves tax are going to affect an ongoing negotiation right now, and that they are moving forward, and they can give their own points of view, and I will not sit here and give it for them because they chose not to. If we don't have the debate in the legislative process, then we've lost the key element of having the legislative process, is to having all points of view come to the table. So as much as I really dislike the initiative process, philosophically speaking, I have also grown frustrated with the lack of those two particular entities' willingness to speak up on this issue. And because it also has a long road to go, and I'll also get my bite at the apple a couple of committees from now on the reserves tax, and I think that if we do not move this bill forward, that we will have no debate, and then we'll be stuck in what I consider the worst of all worlds. No debate in the legislative process. The initiative process will move forward. It'll be on the ballot, and very little debate takes place in the public arena, and we're making a huge public policy decision for $1 billion a year, and I can argue both sides of the reserves tax issue on the political as well as the practical side of the tax. If we're not going to have the debate in this arena, then we should move this forward and try to get the best debate that we can. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I will remove my objection to moving the bill from committee.
Further comments by the committee, Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just on that point, I think one of the reasons this bill is moving is because there's an initiative behind it. If the legislature doesn't act, the public will act.
Thank you, Representative Gruenberg. Further comments by the committee? Representative Wilson.
I just want to make the comment that sometimes I think when there is an initiative, people vote and they don't have all the facts. And that's why we need to scrounge up the facts here. And I feel lots of times that emotions get in the way of initiatives, and people hear somebody say something and take it as fact when it's not always fact. So I think it's important for that reason. Thank you.
Okay, further comments by the committee? And just for the public's benefit, the House Ways and Means is a special committee set up by the House of Representatives to explore methods to fund the state's fiscal gap. Now the gap has swung to the black. We have a surplus and not a deficit, and this committee was set up when we had a deficit. But the purpose of this committee, the very strategic purpose of this committee, was to analyze and address and move forward provisions and measures that would help fund state government. How do we find the means to fund the ways we want to live as a state? And tax policy, as unhappy as it may be and as unpopular as it may be, is the purview of this committee. And so therefore we have an obligation to hear and vet and debate and move forward measures that may not be very popular in the public or with the legislature, but that's our charge. Should also note that on this committee is the chair of the Health and Social Services in the House. We have a member who is on the Judiciary Committee. We have a member who is on the State Affairs Committee. We have another member who's on the Finance Committee. I sit on the Finance Committee. We have the member of chair of the Rules Committee. We have the chair of the Resources Committee. We have the chair of the State Affairs Committee on this very special committee. And I don't say it's special because of the people who sit here, but because of its task. And so I appreciate Representative Samuels and his comments, but I also wanted to give sort of the context for how we analyze and look at measures. And I also appreciate Representative Samuels addressing the notion that we have had the opportunity, we bent over backwards to take public testimony on these measures and had many, many meetings for that specific purpose. So there's been lots of opportunity for that kind of public testimony. So is there an objection to the bill, Representative Samuels? You removed your objection?
I removed my objection from the bill.
Okay. Without objection, the bill will move from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. Is there any other business to come before the committee? We meet at Monday at 9. We will take up a committee substitute to House Bill 375, which is which you have had distributed to you. And with that, the committee is adjourned.